2FM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the end of the week. It's Friday, the 26th of March.
Coming up on Game On tonight, Alan Cawley looks ahead at the domestic action this weekend.
There they are, the champions, Shamrock Rovers. They've broken their own record, their 18th title, their first since 2011, and the good times are back in Tala.
And fresh from the under-21s game against Wales, Fergal Brennan joins Alan to discuss the start of the Republic of Ireland's campaign.
Get Aaron Connolly in the most advanced position for Ireland, just pointing where he wants it, and the cross is delivered but easily cut out. And it's drilled out to this left-hand side as Enda Stevens, 35 metres out from goal, slips it forward now to Callum Robinson, just inside the area, digs it towards the back post, and the header goes in, and Ireland go in front in the 18th minute. A really deft header. Alan Brown right on the mark. Delight for Stephen Kenny.
Shane Byrne comes on and tries to convince us that out-of-form Leinster actually have a chance in tomorrow's Pro 14 final.
Certainly good strength and good leg power as Munster drive forward with that one here. They're short of the line at this moment in time. Referee still with an arm outstretched, caught under pressure here as Murray moves it away. It's gone towards Chris Farrell, breaks through the cover, touches down, and it's a try for Munster, and that has come after 20 minutes of this game.
And Jane Mangan marks our card ahead of the weekend's racing action.
They're on to the running now. It is Minella Indo for Jack Kennedy. And Plutarch trying to come again. There's a length between them. The Cheltenham Gold Cup goes to Ireland. It goes to Minella Indo. Minella Indo for Jack Kennedy, who points to the skies.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. We would love to hear from you.
Game on 2FM.
Well, Marie, how are we doing?
Good. It's Friday. There's lots on this weekend. It's very exciting. So much to look forward to.
It was a bit like Christmas morning. I was waiting around for the teams to be named, and we got a Munster versus Leinster. I'll be honest, there's a lot going on in the world of sport, but I couldn't care less about anything else but this big game, the Pro 14 final. Marie, I know...
It is big. It feels like there's a lot riding on it.
Big, isn't it? Yeah. It's one of these ones. Games like this, I used to make up CDs for my car so that I wouldn't have to listen to the radio for people having these kind of conversations about how big the game is. So,
what would be on the CDs?
Any kind of cool music that I listen to.
Pop music.
Bit of Westlife. But we did get to... look, I know we're going to be chatting to Shane Byrne, but we just might take a run through the teams really quickly that were announced today. So there's a few changes, but I think it's the best we've ever seen Munster and Leinster go out against each other. They are full board. Everyone is available, and it looks like they're as strong as they can be, with a few exceptions. But you would put that down to coaches' calls. So back threes of Hugo Keane and Jordan Larmour and Dave Kearney will go up against Mike Cayley, Andrew Conway and Keith Earls. Then it's going to be an incredible battle in the centre, where Ronan O'Loughney and the unbelievable impressive Robbie Henshaw go up against Chris Farrell and Damien Delande. And then the halfbacks, the big one of interest, Ross Byrne and Luke McGrath, who will skipper Leinster, always reliable in there, go up against Joey Carberry and Conor Murray. And what a battle up front, with Keane Healy, Ronan Keller, Andrew Porter, Devon Toner, who becomes Leinster's most capped player of all time, leapfrogging over Gordon Darcy and Scott Faraday. They'll go up against James Cronin, Niall Scannell, John Ryan, John Klein and Tyke Byrne. And what a battle at the back row, where Rhys Ruddock, Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan go up against Gavin Coombs, Peter O'Mahony and CJ Sanders. So really looking forward to it, Marie. I think that's as strong. I know everyone will go on about Johnny not being involved, and maybe Tyke Furlong. They're probably the guys that people would look to and see, but I think
their replacements are still so strong.
Oh, unbelievable. The benches are really strong, but there's a dynamic within the team, and if you mess with it, and I think it's been a masterstroke by Leo Cullen in terms of, and you hear it in the business world, man management. Luke McGrath has been brilliant for him. He's a real leader. And if you were probably going to bring Johnny in, you might have to start Gibson Park, and then you're putting out two guys that have got you to that final.
Well, Leo did say when he was making selections that he did consider combinations and the importance of them, so
yeah.
That comes through. But it does feel as well, Donica, for the first time in a long time, when you just look at personnel, they're as evenly matched now as they have been.
Yeah, and that's why it's so big, Marie, isn't it? Like, this is it. It's all on it. And look, I've no problem saying that. I feel there is a weight on Munster now to get the monkey off the back. Leinster driving on and picking up silverware the whole time. This is, you know, this could be six in a row, I think, beating Munster. And you can only have a rivalry if it's competitive. And look, it has been. They've been close, but there comes a time as well for certain players. Like the last time we won 10 years ago, I remember Keith Earl scoring that amazing try. And here we are again 10 years on, a week after him tearing it up for Ireland. Just shows how he's always been a standard bearer, but it's a long time since Earl, so he had a medal in his back pocket. And then when you start losing guys as well, and look, there's plenty of motivation both sides. If I was playing with Devon Toner tomorrow and he's becoming the most capped player ever to play for Leinster, you'd want to give him an unbelievable send off. So look, really looking forward to it. It should be an incredible game, and if those teams are anything to go by, we're in for a cracker. We'll go through it all with Shane Byrne very shortly, but get your questions in, 51552.
Before we move off the rugby for now anyway, what about JJ Hanrahan? It looks like he could be heading to France.
Yeah, the French are always good for like leaking something, aren't they? Like paper-wise and stuff. Look, all I'd say, Marie, is I'm a little bit... I'm always conflicted. Of course, I want players to play for Munster and do really well, but I understand as well there's opportunities and they have to earn a living and they have to secure their future. And if JJ was to be given a worthwhile contract in a place like Clermont, and I think he'd really suit them, that type of a pack, put him beside them. And JJ is a talent, he really is. And look, I think as well, if you look at probably the conveyor belt below JJ, there is a strong, and maybe he's had those conversations with the likes of Johan van Grand. Look, nothing's confirmed yet, but JJ owns Munster nothing, and you'd like him to, geez, if he came on and knocked over a drop goal tomorrow, you know, he'd go down.
Well, he'd like to see him depart as well with the medal. So
of course, and CJ and Billy Holland as well. But look, there's plenty of that on both sides. So
yep, we will be going into it in quite a lot of detail a little bit later on. So if anyone has any questions for Shane Byrne or for Donica as well, he's a little bit of experience in the red jersey. He likes to keep it quiet, but you know, there was a time
when
he would he would have been putting those CDs in his car and heading off to play the match. Before we move on to the football, though, I want to give a very quick nod to the Irish sailing crew. So the Irish Olympic team are going to include a 49er sailing crew after Robert Dixon and Sean Waddelove secured qualification for the Olympics in Lanzarote this afternoon. So it was the final qualifying regatta, a sixth place finish in the final fleet race secured qualification. So there will be another crew at the Olympics. So very, very good news for them this afternoon. Wouldn't mind being sailing in Lanzarote myself, but your luck, here we are.
Absolutely. I think now, I'd say sink a boat.
Right, let's turn our attention to football, because as well as rugby, there is a huge amount of football to look forward to this weekend. And I'm delighted to say that Alan Cawley joins us from the RSC down in Waterford. We're going to start with League of Ireland. Alan, so it is the meeting of Waterford and Sligo Rovers. Sligo Rovers obviously have travelled down there pretty long distance. So how's it all shaping up down there, Alan?
Evening, Marie. Evening, Donica. Yeah, it's actually a nice evening down here, Marie. We had a bit of rain earlier on, but the pitch looks very well. I'm just here on the side of the pitch now. Pitch looks really well, and I'm looking forward to the game. It's obviously live on RT at 7:30, kick-off quarter day. And Sligo Rovers are coming here probably with a lot of confidence, judging by the performance that they put in last week against Dundalk. I felt they played really, really well, Marie. I was at the match, and they did play really well. They were probably unlucky not to pick up the 3 points. And certainly there was a lot of optimism and hype about Sligo Rovers before the season kicked off with some of the signings that they made, and that was fully justified when you see the performance that they put in last week. So it's no good putting in a good performance like that then if they come down and slip up against Waterford, who many see as strugglers this year. They started off with a feed against Drogheda last week, which was disappointing. They conceded in the 89th minute, but I actually do see them as strugglers throughout the season, because Kevin Sheedy, who we'll all know, and Mike Newell are in charge now, but the issue for them is they've had to change their whole team from last year, really brought in a new squad of players, very much unknown to the league, Marie, and I'd fancy Sligo Rovers to get the job done here this evening.
We were watching it, and since then have been the last game Sligo Rovers over the weekend against Dundalk, and since then have been talking quite a lot about Johnny Kenny. How good can he be? 17 years old now, Alan.
Yeah, he's 17 years of age, Marie, and there was a lot of talk about him in pre-season as well, but I was actually surprised then that Liam picked him to start the game last week, because I felt as though maybe they were pinning a bit too much pressure on the lad, because he is only 17. But after seeing him in the flesh last week, it was my first time to see him, and judging by the opposition that he was up against as well, considering he was playing against Dundalk and three very big physical experienced defenders, he acquitted himself so well. He played really, really well, Marie, well beyond his age in terms of years, because he was absolutely brilliant. A threat all night, looking to get in behind. He scored plenty of goals at youth level, and I don't think it'll be long before he starts scoring goals at this level as well. Of course, he's the son of the legendary Johnny Kenny that played for Sligo Rovers, and I actually think he could go on and be better than his dad, and I used to love his dad, Marie, so that's a hell of a statement. But from what I saw last week, I'd be very optimistic that he'll go on and have a very good career, the young lad.
Okay, so Alan, stay with us, because there is one game underway, Dundalk and Finn Harps at Oriel Park, and Damien O'Mara is there for us. Damien.
Yeah, 26 minutes played, very entertaining affair. We have third against fourth in the table. It's Finn Harps who've arrived to town with the advantage in the standings off the back of that very impressive opening round win over Bohemians last weekend. Dundalk, by their own admission, looking to improve on the performances from what was a somewhat shaky draw away to Sligo. In terms of team changes, Dara Leahy, Sam Stanton and Michael Duffy come in to the Dundalk starting lineup. Sonny Natistat on international duty with the Faroe Islands is unavailable, as is Ravis Jurkovskis, who's away with Latvia. Patrick McElhenney not involved in the matchday squad at all today. Reports that he suffered an injury in training over the course of the week and misses out. Two changes for Harps: Mark Russell, and a full debut for Will Seymour, with Conor Barry and Ryan Connolly, both of whom picked up injuries last weekend, missing out. Entertaining game so far. Dundalk starting to turn the screw. The best chance of the game early on going to Finn Harps. An Ethan Boyle throw in, long throw from the far wing, headed clear by the Dundalk defence. Seymour meeting it on the edge of the box with a brilliant volley that had he got it on target, no doubt would have beaten BB in the Dundalk goal. Best chance from a Dundalk perspective, brilliant interplay between Dara Leahy and Michael Duffy on the left wing, playing in junior. His shot blocked by the retreating Finn Harps defence. Unusual to see so much long ball football from Dundalk, and in particular Daniel Cleary, who is playing at the centre of a back three at the moment, their main point of distribution. And it's like old style Jack Charlton football: give him the ball and he just pelts it into either corner. So the interplay better in the final third, but it's long rockets from Cleary in particular that is getting it there. So 27 minutes played, we're still waiting the opening goal.
Thanks so much, Damien. We'll check back in with you a little bit later on. Now, Alan, there are some other games on over the weekend. You are, of course, down in the RSC for Waterford and the Sligo Rovers, but there will be interest all around the country. And Bowes and Longford Town tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And I think Bowes will be a team that will want to improve on last week's performance.
They'll have to improve, Marie, yeah, because losing out to Finn Harps was a very disappointing start for them, and not many people would have expected that, myself included. But it was a great result for Finn Harps, but certainly Bohemians, judging, I suppose, going off the back of the last couple of seasons, they've been really riding high in the league. Keith Long has done a marvellous job, and they probably would have aspirations amongst the group themselves this year that they will challenge for the league, and I fully expect them to challenge for the league as well. Whether they'll win it is a different story, because Shamrock Rovers are obviously the favourites, but I definitely have them down as challengers. So to lose up in Finn Harps last week was a very, very disappointing start, and as you rightly say, you should expect a big reaction from them tomorrow. But they're going up against Longford, who themselves, obviously newly promoted to the league, got off to a brilliant start beating Derry City last week, Marie, and it was a great result for them. Again, I wouldn't have predicted that one. There was a few surprise results last week. I got probably three or four of them wrong, but as I say, Longford got off to a great start, but they'll be up against it tomorrow on Daly Mount, and I'd expect Bohemians to beat them.
I'd say you weren't the only one there that got a few results wrong. There weren't too many people expecting Drogheda United to do so well, or for St. Pat's to hold Shamrock Rovers, but that's what happened, and they're meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, a big one in Inchicore as well, and St. Pat's, we obviously covered the game last week, and they played really, really well. They were very impressive, Marie. Good value for the point, if not more, against Shamrock Rovers, and it was a tough start, obviously, for Shamrock Rovers going up against St. Pat's, but they signed a lot of new players in the off-season as well. Stevie O'Donnell, he's reshaped the team, and I felt it looked... Before the match, they looked a lot stronger on paper, and that certainly was the way it materialised in the game. They were very, very good, fit looking and strong. Some of the new additions, like John Mountney, Paddy Barrett, they played really, really well. Coughlin up front, Matty Smith as well, they were lively. So, but the thing with St. Pat's, they've been so inconsistent the last two or three years, Marie, that it's no good going up to Tala last week and getting a positive start if you go out tomorrow and lose the draw or only pick up a point. They'll fully expect to get the 3 points, and they should if they play anything like they played last week. but rather a tough nut to crack. They obviously won the first division, newly promoted as well, and I think they'll be far better equipped to do well in the league than maybe Longford, despite Longford getting the win last week. But Drogheda also got a win against Waterford, but I think this will be a tougher task against St. Pat's tomorrow, and I think St. Pat's will have too much for them.
The first division is going to be a tough task as well, Alan. It's kicking off this weekend as well, and there's some really big guns in there, big teams, big names, big management appointments as well. So there's, I think it'll probably be the one that we'll be really intrigued by.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most competitive first division we've had in years, Marie. And as you say, there's some really big clubs with big history in the division. Obviously Cork got relegated, so Cork City are kicking off against Cove Ramblers. That's a huge game, a local derby, as everybody knows, in Turner's Cross. And Cork, despite them having a young team and Colin Healy now, they'll be looking to get promoted. And you look at Galway as well, as you said, John Caulfield's gone in at Galway. They've gone full time, they've spent a lot of money in terms of their budget and resources, and they're looking to get automatic promotion. Also Shelburne, they're playing tonight against Galway, which is a massive game. Two Premier Division teams, you would think on paper or with history, but the two of them find themselves in the First Division. And Ian Morris has done a lot of business in the off-season as well, and you could argue he's bringing Premier Division players into the squad for a First Division league, but they're hoping to go straight back up as well. So that's going to be a huge game in Terryland Park. Also still, you've UCD, you've Bray, you've newly additions, Treaty from Limerick, representation from Limerick as well, and they kick off against Bray on Sunday. So it's probably going to be the most competitive and high profile First Division we've had in a long, long time, Marie.
And if we weren't busy enough, the Women's National League is starting too.
I'll give us a break, will you, Marie? Yeah, of course, the Women's League is kicking off, and all these games are going to be streamed live, the First Division and the Women's League, and that's a huge addition as well for the league. We're obviously trying to develop the Women's League year on year here, Marie, and they have made big strides, and there's plenty more strides to go, but the fact that it's kicking off, can anybody stop Heamount? They obviously won all before them last year, but Noel King has gone back in charge at Shelburne, and they've recruited quite well. Chloe Mustaki has gone back to Shelburne as well. So Wexford Youths, I think they're playing Peamount in the first game, so they'll be looking to maybe topple Peamount early doors as well. But it should be really competitive. As I say, all the games can be streamed as well, and I think that's a big addition for the girls, and it's the right addition, and that's good. And as I say, they're trying to develop the league all the time, and I think there's probably more quality in the domestic league this year as well than what's been there in previous years.
Absolutely, it's getting better every single season. Alan, stay with us. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to chat about the Republic of Ireland under-21s who beat Wales earlier today. We're going to look ahead to the Luxembourg game as well, and anything else that comes to mind.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are in the company of Alan Cawley, who is down at the RSC, and Fergal Brennan, who is just back from watching the Republic of Ireland under-21s beat Wales a little bit earlier. Fergal, to you first. You went to watch the game. I think at this stage we're just so happy to see a Republic of Ireland team win. We don't care what it is, if it's a friendly or not, but I actually watched the stream. It took them a little while to settle into it, but in the second half they were much better. But I think Jim Crawford handing out 11 debuts, it was going to take a little bit of time for things to get going.
Yeah, it was a tough start for Ireland, and the wind and the weather conditions played a big part in that. I lost a cup of coffee inside the first 10 minutes. Wales, I wouldn't say Wales were much better than Ireland in the early stages. There was only really one chance in the first half, and Wales took that away to give them the lead at the break. And I think the important thing from an Irish perspective is Jim Crawford's message at half-time will have been not to panic, don't try and force the issue, trust what they've been doing in the last 3 or 4 days in the training camp in Wales. And ultimately, some better performances individually and collectively after the break got the win. Jonathan Afolabi got the equaliser. And then a little bit harsh on Wales, because particularly when you're watching underage football, mistakes, you always feel bad because, you know, these young players will probably take it to heart. And it was a really ridiculous own goal that eventually sealed the win for Ireland just a couple of minutes after Afolabi got the equaliser. But lots of positives, I think, particularly second half, and certainly in the last half an hour. Luke O'Connell, who's Celtic midfielder on loan at Queen's Park, looked good. He was nice and tidy in midfield, not frightened to put his foot in. Conor Noss, who probably is one of the names that people have been most excited to see in this one. He's at Borussia Mönchengladbach. He did an interview earlier this week, kind of the usual situation, looking to lay down his allegiance to play for Ireland. He was probably Ireland's best player on the day. Linked up really well between midfield and attack. He got the assist for Afolabi, a little bit of skill out wide to set him up. And as I say, at the end of the game, it was a very, very fortunate own goal that eventually tipped it. But far more positives to take, particularly the reaction. Whenever you watch under 18 or under 21 football, you're always looking to that reaction of falling behind or a setback. And Ireland showed that they've got the mettle for that. And Jim Crawford will be pleased at full time.
Yeah, Fergal, that is something that you'd look for in any sport, the ability to stick in it. And you mentioned Connor and Luke there, but there's always rising stars, someone that probably doesn't get a whole lot of credit. Was there anyone that you've seen there that you said, that's a tidy player, that's someone to watch out for?
Obviously, I would say Luke O'Connell and Conor Noss would be probably the names that you'd look out for. Mark McGuinness at centre-back, who's an Arsenal player on loan at Ipswich Town, was good. Just very solid. Wales didn't have an enormous amount of forward threat, but he was very consistent in everything he did. He was really strong in the air. Any crosses, any set pieces, generally it was him getting his head on it and clearing his lines. He was looked to drive that Ireland defence up a little bit higher and be a little bit braver. And his centre-back partner, Andrew Omobamadeli, who's at Norwich, was also very good. They dovetailed quite well. He was kind of sweeping up in behind McGuinness. But I'd say, other than the midfielders who grew into the game, Mark McGuinness was very good, just very solid, consistent, didn't let anything get by him, made some really good decisions. And again, we go back to this idea of people playing underage football. When you're seeing a young centre-back who's very sensible and makes the right decisions, that's always a good sign. Mm.
Sure is, Alan. I'm going to move on to the Republic of Ireland, who are playing Luxembourg tomorrow, and the news that Aaron Connolly could be ruled out of the game. We're not really sure. There are some mixed messages regarding his fitness. The FAI tweeted at lunchtime, ruled out Connolly, but then Stephen Kenny was speaking to the media this afternoon and said that he could be there, 50-50 chance, but if not, it could be Troy Parrott, which wouldn't be bad to see Troy Parrott.
No, but I think Connolly, coming off the back of the game during the week, Marie, I was hoping that he would play, and maybe you'd fancy our chances that we will get a lot more chances in this game and create a lot more, that maybe Aaron could open his account. I know some people were probably surprised that he started, considering the fact that he hasn't played much at Brighton and coming off the back of an injury as well. And I know there was a doubt before the game against Serbia, but the fact that he did play, I know he came off early, but I was hoping that he'd be okay for this game and that we could fill him with confidence, because I think Stephen is obviously focusing on him as being our main man. I know James Collins came on and scored, and he's probably playing more regularly at club level, albeit in the league below, but I think Stephen really likes Aaron. So I'm a bit disappointed if he is out, Marie, but again, the messaging is not good. The fact that the communication, as you say, the FAI tweeted that he's out and then Stephen says he's not out, coming off the back of what I felt, even though we got beat by Serbia, it was a positive week in terms of how things went with the performance and the messages, I suppose, Stephen's getting across in terms of the philosophy and what he's trying to implement. I think people could see that a lot more clearer in the performance the other night. So it's just a bit disappointing that that's the case, that the communication seems to be at odds again between the manager and the social media team or whoever's tweeting out stuff.
Yeah, well, hopefully it was just I'm sure it was just a mistake, and Stephen was able then to at least put out the more accurate situation with Connolly. But you're right, it is disappointing, because I think he's had so much promise that, you know, we'd like to see him get the best out of himself and deliver for Ireland and score a few goals in a big game, which is Luxembourg, Fergal. It really is a big game. And as Alan said, I think most people are focusing on the positivity and would like to see Ireland build on that now tomorrow and come away with the win.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, on the back of the Serbia result, I think the immediate post-mortem obviously focuses on the result and the disappointment of the winless run stretching onto eight games. But the positives do far outweigh the negatives, the performance, individuals, the system that Stephen Kenny wanted to put in place. And now we get an opportunity tomorrow night in Dublin against Luxembourg to see that hopefully resulting in a first win for him. But I would have a bit of a word of caution about Luxembourg. I think they're an example of a team who's benefited from this new Nations League that we've seen in the last few years, because they've been given the opportunity to play against teams that are deemed at their level. That's given them more confidence. They've won a few games in 2020, which Ireland haven't. I'd fully expect 3 points and this duck for Stephen Kenny to be broken, but it won't be easy, and particularly if we're going to see a situation where Luxembourg look to sit deep, 9-10 players behind the ball, that will make it difficult. But I think the focus for Stephen and the players ahead of the game is to trust in what they're doing. He made brave calls for the Serbia game. Jeff Hendrick, Shane Duffy left out. I think a big raft of changes for this match would send a bad message, because it would potentially deflate a little bit of the confidence of some of the younger players. And despite the fact that Luxembourg will offer a different challenge, he has to keep faith in this system and this way of doing things that he's already shown.
Alan, would you agree? Do you think that he has to show trust in the guys he's put out this weekend, and as well the formation that he's now trying to play?
Yeah, absolutely, Dunnicky. Yeah, and Stephen will. I have absolutely no doubt that he'll change away from that. He'll stick with these boys. There were brave calls, but there were the right calls. Shane Duffy hasn't been playing well enough. At club level, Jeff Hendrick has gone backwards totally. Robbie Brady's another one. So I have no worries about the younger lads. It's the older lads who I think need to step up their game. They've gone off the boil totally at club level. I know the young lads are trying to make their way, but I thought all the young lads acquitted themselves really, really well in the game during the week. And I think Stephen showed a lot of faith in the fact that he picked them against Serbia. So I fully expect him to pick them against Luxembourg as well. And I think he should, because the formation and the shape and the personnel, for me, the personnel always dictates the system that you want to play. And we have the personnel to play that, obviously, with the wing-backs, with Matt Doherty and Enda Stevens. Alan Brown made reference to it in his interview afterwards, that all the players felt comfortable because they were playing in their preferred positions. And I think that's really important, Dunnicky. And I think that's why they played so well, because the system wasn't alien to them at all. And these young lads will only benefit from the game the other night and the performance, albeit a defeat. But sometimes you need to lose to maybe grow as well, and I think that's the case with a lot of those young lads. And if it was the case that we could go out tomorrow night and replicate the performance that we did against Serbia and get the victory, it would do them the world of good, the young lads, and Stephen. And I think it's important for Stephen that we get the victory as well. He's had a really tough time in terms of injuries and COVID and all sorts of things working against him, out of his control in a lot of cases. But I think we saw enough from the game the other night that their team is certainly on the right track, but we need to be patient with them because they're young lads, and give Stephen a chance and give the players a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, we know you're dashing off to cover the Waterford versus Sligo game in the RSC. We saw a pocket square and a haircut like that. You looked like you did it yourself. What can we expect from the wardrobe tonight, Colly?
Well, the haircut is still the same, and I'm still doing it myself, Sonica. And I'm doing a better job than the Grafton barber, I tell you that much.
Brilliant. Throw on a hat if you can find one, Alan. Thanks.
And Alan, just before we go, give us a prediction for tomorrow.
2-0 Ireland, and I'm confident, Marie.
And Fergal?
I'll go a bit braver. I'll go 3-0. Why not?
Oh, yes, bring it on. That's fair play.
There you go.
Goals, we'll take them. Okay, Brilliant. Let's take a quick break, and then it's rugby.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is heading for half-time at Oriel Park between Dundalk and Finn Harps, and Damien O'Mara is standing by for us. Damien.
And we are just awaiting the fourth official to put up the board to tell us how much additional time we have had, or we're going to have, just about to cross into the 45th minute, and it is Finn Harps to lead by a goal to nil. That goal coming in the 43rd minute. Dundalk playing the ball around at the back. Alessio Abibi, their goalkeeper, in possession. His attempt to clear, charged down by Adam Foley. The ball trickling over the goal to give Finn Harps the lead. Certainly not against the run of play. Harps have had to absorb an awful lot of pressure, but they've been very, very evenly matched throughout the game. Dundalk, a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes, certainly not finding anywhere close to the rhythm or the heights we would have expected of them based on previous seasons. So we're about to have 1 minute of additional time, and it does appear like Finn Harps will go in 1-0 up at the break.
Thanks, Damien.
Cheers, Damien. Okay, brothers in green, rivals in red and blue, a Munster versus Leinster game is the highlight of the season, but put a Pro 14 title on the line and you can expect absolute fireworks. We're delighted to be joined by Leinster, Ireland and Lyon, Shane Byrne. Munch, how are you?
Hey guys, how are we?
We're great. Yourself? Shane, I've never been so excited about a game in a long time. I cannot wait for tomorrow.
It's fantastic. Having a final, you know, a week after the Six Nations. I know we have a game tonight to take care of as well, but it's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, when the teams came out, it didn't disappoint. I really, as I was going through both teams, I started to get a buzz for the game, because I think this is the closest we've had to two fully loaded teams with a Munster-Leinster game in a long time, because we all know there's been loads of reasons for the last couple of seasons why it hasn't happened. But I think this is very, very close, and it should make out for a brilliant game.
Shane, did you ever have any issues playing with the lads in green and then going out and bashing them afterwards in the red and blue?
Not at all. It's always easy to open up the rivalry again just when you're pretending that you're friends with them in the green, you know, it's always good to get back to normal business. But it is what it is, though. You know, I've always said it, the people you want to lose to least are the people you know the best. And you spend all the time with these guys, but it's very easy just to get straight back into rivalry, because you know you won't take a step back. You know that you will not want to give in to a guy who you're probably rooming with the week before, and it adds an extra amount of spice to it. No, there will be absolutely no ground given between these two sides, not an inch.
Donica, how did you feel today when you were reading or hearing Leo Cullen having the little digs, saying Andrew Conway a black rock man, Joey Carberry another black rock man? It was subtle but very effective, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. But it goes around as well, and Leo will remember, you know, when, you know, the likes of Simon Keogh and the likes of Owen Redden, Trevor Hogan, so like things like that do go around. Sean Cronin, so I think he's playing a bit of silly buggers with it as well. You look at Conway coming into the Munster team, he's been incredible and really bought into the environment as well. And then you've guys like Joey Carberry, who signed a contract in the middle of one, which is just an incredible sign of loyalty. The one thing I'd say about Leo, of course he's going to be spiky this weekend, but Munch, I'd be interested in your take on his half-back pairing. That shows a bit of loyalty.
It does, and I think that's the key to it, because like we all know, one of the things that he does better than nearly all coaches out there is his man management, because he needs to be able to do that, to hold that massive squad together, that he gives guys opportunities. And he had to give a little bit of a doff of the cap towards the guys who got him into this position, and it wasn't just all about the internationals. And I think he made the right decision putting Sexton and Furlongs and Gibson Park on the bench, and giving the Ross Burns and McGrath, Luke who's captaining as well, and the likes of Dave Kearney, giving these guys who got them to this point, giving them all the opportunity to start the game. And I think it's a very, very smart play by Leo.
Munch, if we're to go through it, can we just pick through it? And look, two of us know it. Like, forwards win the game. Can we just go through this front five? Healy, Kelleher, Porter, Toner, who becomes the most capped player, and what a servant he's been to Leinster. And Fardy, who never puts in a big bad performance against James Cronin, Niall Scannell, John Ryan, John Klein, and the impressive Tadhg Byrne, who everyone might see as a six, but playing in the role for Munster. That is going to be a battle.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're almost talking parity here. I can't see either of those fives getting on top. I think there might be a different bit of spice with Tadhg Byrne in the second row for Munster in the way he plays the game. But the workhorse in Scott Fardy, the line-out domination that Tona will hope to get, I can't imagine that there'd be much of change given in the scrum, particularly the biggest battle, to my eyes, is Porter against Cronin. Because Cronin has been in great form, you know what I mean? Again, with another doff of the cap from the Munster point of view, which is Kilcoyne on the bench rather than being brought straight in. And it's really going to be, you know, these guys will be so set-piece orientated, but also around the park. You know yourself, when you get a chance to meet, a spark should fly.
And then, look, you need X-factor players in big games like this. And if you look to the back threes, Conway, Earls, Mike Haley up against Hugo Keane, Jordan Larmour and Dave Kearney. Like, Dave Kearney, another one. It would have been easy to bring someone like James Lowe in, but in another, like, he's been an outstanding player this Pro 14.
He literally, he's just one of these players that seems to be produced by Leinster, particularly in the back three for a long time. They just don't make mistakes. Very much at the first McFadden mode. You give him an opportunity, he'll take it, and makes very few errors, and you can build an awful lot around players like that. Larmour hasn't had too much game time. You know, we all know what he can do. He's an absolute live wire. Keenan, to me, one of the discoveries of the Six Nations, to settle into international rugby like he was a seasoned international. And then, but would you bet against a back three that has the Earls in it? I just think he is absolutely, he's having, you know, a total rejuvenation, the Benjamin Button of wingers. And I've always loved Andrew Conway. I think the man just never stops, and Haley has been playing brilliant. But to me, it'd be very hard ever to bet against Keith Earls. It's just that Munster backline has to get the ball into these guys' hands so that they can do something.
So where will the game be won then, do you think?
Yeah, listen, it's it really is going to be something that I think the back rows are going to have massive influence on the game. And what back rows they are, I know we've been running through the teams, but, you know, it is unbelievable to see the talent coming through. Like CJ Stander, in, you know, we're all unfortunately counting down the time that he's going to be in the jersey. It's getting less and less. So that will add absolute spice to it. Gavin Combs is, again, one of these players that has just absolutely burst out of his skin this season and has been fantastic. You know, mentioned that maybe getting into the green jersey very, very soon, and well deserved for the way he's been playing. No words need to be said about Peter O'Mahony in a local derby. We all know how good he is. But Reece Ruddock, to me, is one of those guys who's much maligned and has been one of those, you know, he just never gets the plaudits for what he does. Van der Fleer and Conan. Conan had a cracking game, obviously, the weekend. To me, that's the battle. Whoever starts to get on top of here, starts to get control of the ruck time, and starts to either slow up or speed up the ruck, depending on who has the ball, that's going to be, because to me, it's the small, tiny margins that are going to make the difference in this, because I really do think a lot is primed for Munster here. There's been a lot of talk about Leinster and what's happened, you know, previous to this. But, you know, all of these things can't continue forever. All of these records do end up being broken, and that's the key to it, that Munster have to take superb advantage, capitalise on any errors that there are. And to me, the back row is absolutely essential, that in the breakdown area.
Donica, it feels like, anyway, that there's so much at stake for Munster. Then there's the fact that CJ and Billy Holland are finishing up as well. There's the pressure because people are making them favourites. So there's a lot of emotion in there as well when you put all of them together. How difficult is it to channel that the right way?
Yeah, and you're right. And it's something you mentioned as well about Leo's comments, even small things like that. And what we're seeing at the moment, and Shane, you're seeing it as well, refereeing decisions are so massive now, that emotional buy-in and so someone doing something really silly is game over. So one red card, and I think that's, Marie, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Discipline is so big tomorrow. Who can stay clean? Who can actually, you know, be so on edge but not go over the top with something silly? But I think Munster have to find a different way. I think Munster tried over the last few times to beat Leinster with a kicking game and a strong battle game, and then they got frustrated 2 weeks later when they saw Saracens doing it. But Munster aren't that type of team. You've a Ferrari with Joey Carberry, and you've got to use him. I think Munster got to outrun Leinster tomorrow. I think they've got to play a pace of game that Leinster, you know, really pushes them out of their comfort zone. That will be so, so hard to do, because we know they're a fantastic team. But I just think we always say it's the definition of madness to try something again and again and again, and when you're not getting results. And for me, I think Munster over the last while, Munch, and I don't know, do you agree, I think they've kicked away too much ball. I would love to see them keep ball in hand tomorrow and really set the tempo of the game.
Yeah, I would agree, particularly the last time when they were chasing the game. I thought that their kicking policy was very, very poor. Now, ironically, when the stats came out of the game, Leinster had kicked pretty much the same amount, but it worked in their execution for them. But I think it is right, because there's no doubt when you're setting up a defensive structure for a game as big as this, the kicking game is going to be in Leinster's head. It is going to be in their minds. They will have set up a defensive structure around that. So you're right. If Munster come out, particularly with Carberry leading the way, and they change the game plan, and they keep the ball in hand, and they go through the phases, looking for the space, spreading the ball out to those amazing wingers, and just giving them a go, and building a game plan from that. It's something like that, to me, is what Munster need to do. It's not just same old, because Leinster, we all know, even if they get caught for on the hop a little bit, they normally come back into it and they build and they change around the game. But if Munster come out with a completely unexpected game plan and keep going and getting that scoreboard ticking, because one of the biggest pluses that Leinster have, unfortunately for Munster, is their bench. They have a really, really strong bench. And a very effective bench, with not just the obvious ones with Sexton, etc., but like Ryan Bird on the bench as well. Tadhg Furlong will obviously exploit any, a guy who's come back in amazing form, any weaknesses in the scrum or set piece. Gibson Park and Sexton, we've all seen they've been playing brilliantly. So Munster need to have done a lot of their work before that bench come on, because I think that's so important, because look, that's just the way it is. It is a very strong bench.
Yeah, I think you're right. When it comes to X-factor players, they're certainly there, but guys like Ross Maloney, I don't think I've ever seen him put in a poor game. You look at James Tracy, they're dotted throughout it. Just look, Gordon Darcy's record will go tomorrow with Devin Toner, and he's someone that, you know, everyone points out, oh, Devin's great at the lineouts. As a second, I watch his work rate, it's through the roof. How incredible of an achievement is it for Devin Toner tomorrow?
Oh, it's incredible. The longevity that he's had, and to be built the way he was, particularly when he arrived in the scene, and he really was a beanpole. And, you know, just to be able to knuckle down and keep the game. And like what you say, Dunners, he is so much more than just a lineout. It's just that he is so good at that. And it's also his calling of it, his owning of the responsibility of the lineout. But watch the work that he does, his defensive work, his tackling, his ruck hitting, and his ball carrying. For a huge man, he is always offering himself for work. So it's a massive, massive milestone for him, and well-deserved. You couldn't hand it to anyone better.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Sorry, Crow.
I just have one question for you, Donegal, before we finish up. Are there areas you're worried about tomorrow?
I'm worried about the discipline. I just think the way it's been reffed, and we've gone through that. Always, I know it comes down to set piece, Marie. It really does come down to who can execute. And I know we've all fallen in love with the brilliant job Paul O'Connell has done with the Irish lineout, but the Munster lineout has creaked a bit over the last while, and I think that's something why Devin Toner is involved. You know, there's no doubting Ryan Beard is the up and coming second row within that setup, and Ross Maloney. But he's gone with Devin to take away that access. And Shane, you know better than anyone, you lose your line-out, it's your main strike of launch at the moment.
It is, yeah. Particularly the way Leinster play as well. That is very, very important to what they're doing. And Munster, when the line-out creaks, it's such a central part of what they do, the strength in the pack. It does have a ripple effect. And if I could just touch on as well, the refereeing is an incredible. The Six Nations to this point has been that nearly every game we're talking about is just unbelievable refereeing decisions, and the discussions between the TMOs and the refs. It's such a shame. Hopefully we don't have a game like that tomorrow, and it is free flowing and as exciting as we want it to be.
I'm convinced they know that they're on Saturday night, so they think they're the X factor at the moment. So there's all these kind of I'm going to get shot here by Andrew O'Connor for going over time, but one question just before we leave and go: could we shoot ourselves in the foot here with two of us knocking lumps out each other and then being flat footed for Champions Cup next weekend?
Yes, absolutely. But I think that's just the way it goes. This game deserves to be that high up. It's two fantastic sides at it, and if they're a bit punch drunk after it, well, so be it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I'm not calling it.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, correct.
Shane, I can't call it. Do you want to?
Listen, I tell you what, like, for Irish rugby, it would be better if Munster won it, because a decade is too long for Munster not to have any sarcasm. But, like, I'm not to have any win or silverware, but I can't go against Leinster.
Yeah.
I really do think Leo has just masterminded another fantastic season, and I can't see them losing it at this point.
Okay, Shane, we all hope you're wrong. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Quick break.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, Cheltenham may be over and the focus might be on the Irish National Hunt, which begins next weekend in Ferry House. But with the evenings getting longer and the ground a little bit harder, it would be wrong not to focus on the flat turf. And we're delighted to be joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Jane, just a bit of a change up at the moment with everything that's going on, and we're looking at the flat.
Yes, look, we still have Punchestown and Ferry House and obviously Aintree to come, but this weekend we have to turn our attention to the flat. We have marvellous representation in Dubai this weekend. We have two Irish contestants out there. We have Stephen Collins for Joseph O'Brien in the Group 1 sprint over 6 furlongs, and he is in each way a chance, but he's a horse that loves to travel. He's often very consistent in those types of races. And you question, why have they gone to Dubai? they've gone to Dubai because the price or the prize money and purses on offer are out of this world. The feature race on the night is the Dubai World Cup, and it's worth over £5 million. But Mogul is the big hope, I think, in the 4:10 tomorrow, the Dubai Shima Classic. He was a slow burner last year, many people's fancy for the Epsom Derby. That didn't quite happen, but towards the end of the year, he got his act together. He won the Grand Prix de Paris, and he culminated his season with a really emphatic win in the Hong Kong Vase. Is he going to be good enough to take home the £2 million prize? He's going to have to be very good. Chronogenesis is over from Japan, three-time Group 1 winner in Japan, and Japan are a really strong racing country. They have really good quality horses over there, and this is where we see the international competition. You have Channel Maker in the Shima Classic from the US. You have Mistress, the horse that won the Saudi Cup for John Gosden and David Egan. First time over this trip. Will he stay a mile and a half? We're going to find out. Charlie Appleby is Walter Street in there. Andrew Balding, Berkshire Rocco. So Mogul's going to have to be good, but he is good. It's a very good race.
Jane, just on, you mentioned Aidan O'Brien and Joseph O'Brien. This is their time now. Is there anything else you'd see out there that you'd fancy?
Yeah, well, I it's very difficult to get a handle on the form across nations. And to be honest, I've been on National Hunt all winter, but this is the start. This is the earmark for the flat season. And I think going forward, we're going to see top quality racing. And we even see a Nace on Sunday when we start off looking at the Park Express. I remember last year looking at the Park Express thinking Even So was the most likely winner, and she got beaten. But following her through the season, she finished off her year winning the Irish Oaks. So that can just tell you what type of horses you can see at this time of year. They're slowly being brought to the boil by their trainers. And yeah, this is exciting. If you are a flat fan, this is the time of year you've been waiting for.
So who should we be looking out for then? Who else should we be looking out for on in Sunday in Nace?
Yeah, well, this is, again, the Park Express is a race that can throw very good horses. Now, this is where the three-year-olds meet their olders. Elara and Fantasy Lady are 2 3-year-olds who are very promising towards the end of last year. They're going to meet Parents Prayer and the likes of Epona Plays. So they're getting their weight allowance at this time of year, which is quite significant. But Archie Watson has a wonderful record when he comes over here with his Raiders. And Parents Prayer, for him, a Kingman filly. She was a winner here last year. We obviously know she travels well. She must have every chance. But I like Elara. I was in Leopardstown when she won her maiden. I think she could be very good this year. And DK Weld, he often has a good one.
Yeah, Jane, just, I know we're going to be doing the Punters Council, but just asking for a friend here, a good tip for the weekend.
Well, I actually was putting up Elara for the Park Express, and now that I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, oh my God, why did I do that? It's such a competitive renewal of the race. So Parents Prayer, you always have to respect Archie Watson when he comes to Ireland, but at this time of year, the weight allowance is so significant. I'm going to stick with Elara. Always stick with your initial gut feeling, because you'll only regret it if you abandon ship.
Very
so
true.
I'm going Elara. Yeah,
write down this advice as well, Donica.
A tip and a brilliant bit of advice.
I learned from experience. But look, in Maidan, we proved in Cheltenham last week. I know it's obviously poles apart and thousands of miles apart as well geographically, but we are a country that can compete at the highest level across international scales. So I hope the O'Briens can continue that trend this weekend.
Absolutely, Jane. Is it too early to start looking ahead to Fairy House, the Irish National? You know, it's been brilliant. Can they keep it going?
I do think so. It's difficult to know what's actually going to line up because, as you say, the ground is changing all the time. Looking at Aintree, I know there's been a number of market moves for JP McManus's horses this week. One notable move is Manila Times, who's likely to be the mount of Rachel Blackmore, should that horse line up in Aintree. And that might be just a stimulus to the fact of how well Henry de Bromhead's horses are going at the moment. But it's all to play for. The ground is likely to change. That's often a big factor. And for National Hunt fans, you're not going to starve of action. You've got Limerick on Sunday. There's a graded novice chase there and a listed mare's bumper. So lots to look forward to. And racing never stops.
Well, Jane, you might as well stay with us now because we're joined by Leon Blanche and we're going to do the punters council. And I know you have a tip for us, so we will get it off you a little bit in a minute or two. But Donegal, what are we playing for?
We just saw today it's National Daffodil Day and it's the second time we're in lockdown for it. So it's their biggest fundraiser for the Irish Cancer Society. And we thought it'd be good that we could help them with their support. So thankfully, we have Leon Blanche from Boyle Sport who's going to help us out here. Leon, how are you?
I'm doing good, Donegal. How are you? And it's a fantastic charity. My own father has cancer. So please God, there's a lot of people in Ireland who need support and need funds. So here's hoping I'll be doing it. So here's hoping one of us can pick a good one to give a nice donation to a very worthy charity.
Just on that, Leon, and that's the thing with the Irish Cancer Society, it affects all of our friends, our families, people we love around us, and reaches out to 49,000 people every year. So it is a brilliant charity, and thanks so much for helping us. I think we have the first one is Alan Cawley. He has gone for Ireland to win 2-0 tomorrow against Luxembourg. What do you make of that, Leon?
Yeah, look, I think Ireland played well. I think the other night, I think everyone feels that it was a step in the right direction. This is a 5-1 chance for Ireland to beat Luxembourg, 2-0. I'm going to make it a 10-1 chance if we decide to go for Alan's selection.
Good, that's a good one, and I think a lot of people will be tuning into to that game as well. It's such a big game as well, and the rugby as well is going to be massive this weekend. Shane Byrne has went for Leinster and France to win.
Yeah, Marie, look, two odds on just. It worked out at 8-11, which is odds on, obviously, but because it's such a fantastic charity, I'm going to give this a 5-1 chance for Shane double.
Okay, and then
Jane is still with us.
Yes, Jane, what do you fancy?
I'm hanging on to Krona Genesis in the Dubai Shima Classics Maidan. He's the Japanese raider and top class in Japan, and I think he might be just top class in the world.
Okay, Leon, what do you make? What odds would you give us for Jane on this?
Yeah, look, very good chance. It's going to take a lot of beating. 9-4 is the real price. But again, we'll push that all the way out to 7-1 for Jane's selection for this week. And I suppose the Boyle Sports boost, hopefully keeping it simple. I think Leinster will win. I think Ireland will win. It works out at 5-4. I'm going to push that all the way out to 6-1. For the Boyle Sports boost.
Very generous. And Donegal, the pressure is on you now,
because this is
obviously a massive charity that really needs our support. And as you outlined, it affects everybody. Everybody knows somebody that has suffered from this disease or is suffering from it. So I'm building it up now. Over to you.
Absolutely. And look, I think an awful lot of them do involve, be it with Leon's or Shane's, they involve Leinster winning. So I'm going to go with Jane. I'm going to go with Jane tomorrow, because what I've learned with the Boyle Sports Punters Council is that you never go wrong back in Jane Mangan.
Well, I'll tell you what we do. We'll go with Jane, and if Jane doesn't win, we'll go with the Boyle Sports Boost. So I think both Leinster and Ireland will win. So we'll have two shots at the charity bet this week, because I think cancer touches every single family at some stage in Ireland.
Brilliant. Leon, fair play to you. And if you'd like to find out any support, research, or get any more information, you can visit the irishcancer.ie, or you can also donate there. Leon, thanks so much. Jane, brilliant stuff.
Thanks, Marie. Guys. We're nearly out of time, but we are just going to have one very quick check-in at Oriel Park with Damien O'Mara.
8.5 minutes of the second half played. Adam Foley gave Harps the lead 2 minutes before half-time. Pat Hooban has equalised for Dundalk 2 minutes into the second half. Free kick from Duffy. Hooban rising relatively unchallenged, but brilliantly craned his neck to steer the ball past Mark McGinley. We have 9 minutes of the second half played. It's Dundalk 1, Finn Harps 1.
Thanks, Damien. Thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Laura Lee Davids. Myself and Marie are back on Monday at 6 o'clock. Enjoy the weekend. The brilliant Blonde Tracy is up next with the official chart show.